Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Ally. Ally, powered by Verizon locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company, in collaboration with Ally, a membership-only community workspace for creators. Each location is a community curated powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Ally, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs.
And now, on to my interview with Matt Skills.
When I set my sights to something, I just have blinders on. You know what I'm saying? And it's not because I don't have the emotion or the spirit to love or to be. I have to get this done.
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music, let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study they move, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
Welcome to the 50th episode of the Silent Giants podcast, a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. To keep up with the latest on the show, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast. To keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. This week's Silent Giant is Grammy-nominated rapper, songwriter, and Virginia legend, Mad Skills. Skills is largely credited for being the first artist to put Virginia hip-hop on the map, but built an illustrious career as a ghostwriter for some of the biggest rap acts of all time. Currently, Skills holds a teaching position at the University of Richmond at the School of Professional and Continuing Studies. In this interview, I connect with Mad Skills in our hometown of Richmond, Virginia, to chat about his early life, how he broke into the music industry with Missy Elliott and Timbaland, connecting with DJ Clark Kent, his first record deal with Atlantic back in the 90s, his career as a ghostwriter. We chat about his new EP, I'm the DJ and the Rapper, and a whole lot more. So, without further ado, on our 50th episode of the podcast, let me introduce you to the rapper, songwriter, DJ, educator, my friend, the silent giant, Matt Skills. Skills, what up, man?
What's up, bro?
How are you?
Oh, man, I'm awesome. Life is good.
It's really crazy. This is the first time meeting you, being right. That we're both born and raised Richmond.
Yes.
I call it the Bougie Black
Network.
Well,
I wasn't born here, but I've been here forever.
Well, when did you move
here?
I've
been here since like 87.
Okay.
Born in Detroit, but I don't even remember being in Detroit.
Because how were you when you moved here?
I was like 15, maybe 14.
Oh, you were like in your formative years.
Yeah. I was definitely a teenager when I got to Richmond, for sure.
Where'd you go to high school?
John F. Kennedy.
Oh, get out. So you went to like school proper in the city.
Yeah, right off of Mechanicsville.
Like 9 Mile Road.
Yeah.
What's crazy, I call it the Bougie Black Network because everyone in Richmond is black, knows each other in some way.
Right, yeah.
So in some way, you're constantly connected. Like,
right.
You know my sister, Chelsea.
Yes.
My cousin, Bruce.
Yes.
But like, I didn't know you personally.
Right. Right, but we had 6 degrees of separation.
Yes. The Bougie Black Network.
Yes.
How's the day going for you?
Oh, man, you know, it's Labor Day, but slow day.
Yes, but as it should be.
Yeah, we got a gig tonight, so I'm trying to get ready for that, and I had one last night, so I'm kind of sluggish, but I'll be all right.
How do you get prepped for your show?
You know, you kind of just got to go into it and just wish for the best sometimes. You know, because being on stage and being the person that, you know, you have to ensure that other people are having a good time. Nobody asks you how you're feeling.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, if I got into it with somebody or had an argument or something, I still got to get on stage and say, throw your hands in the air and, you know, all my party people, like, and I might not even be in the mood for that, but that's the job.
Exactly.
I mean? That's the job. So, and I don't have a day job, so I won't complain about it.
Well, you know what it is? I always say that no matter what, you should always be in the service industry.
Yeah.
And we're in the service industry of entertaining people, whether it's podcasting,
yeah,
whether it's being on stage, making music, yeah, entertaining. We're all servicing.
Yeah, man,
others.
We are. We definitely are.
So how would you describe Richmond as a city?
Very, you know, a melting pot, man, of definitely a southern, kind of southern, but northern, because we're right on the border in between North Carolina and the D.C. So, you know, it's definitely you run into all kind of people here, and you have so many colleges that, you know, you end up with a lot of people that aren't from here that might come here and then like it and then end up staying, or people who went to school here and then go back or start businesses here. But it's definitely a melting pot of people and culture, you know what I mean? So and I never looked at it as a slow paced place. It's not like, I think when I would tell people a lot of times, oh yeah, you know, I'm in Richmond, Virginia, they would think like country, and they was thinking like, right, dirt roads or like Charles City or something. And I'm like, yeah, nah, it's a city, you know what I mean? Like, and it definitely has its city elements. So yeah, the culture of it is it's a beautiful place, man. I love it. You know what I mean?
It definitely, to me, Virginia's kind of a really interesting state. There's about three or four cultures,
right,
within the same state.
Yes.
If you're in DC, it's very government.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Tidewater, it's very chill beach.
Right, right. Beach town.
Then you get to Richmond, and then Richmond's maybe kind of the most true city, yeah, city.
Right.
Proper.
Yeah.
In Virginia.
Proper city.
Then you get west of that, you have like the mountains.
Right.
But
yeah.
But if you go south of Richmond and you go west of Charlottesville, you get country.
Yes.
Like once you get past those mountains, like, yeah, the Appalachians, a Blue Ridge.
Yeah, wow. I never really looked at it like that. But yeah, we're surrounded by a whole lot of different things.
Yeah.
So you can go in any different direction for an hour and a half and it'll be a totally different landscape.
Totally different vibe.
Yeah.
How has Richmond kind of shaped your personality or your musical style? Or
I would say that as far as this, it shaped me knowing that I couldn't, you know, it was so many other things being done. I knew what I wanted to bring to the game, and I knew what I couldn't do as far as what other states had already established. So, you know, I couldn't make, you know, music and use go-go as my bass and act like it was new, because go-go wasn't new. Somebody already had that. I couldn't do like Baltimore Club because somebody already had that. So we couldn't do G-Funk because the West Coast already had that. So I think musically it inspired me to just be myself and hope that, you know, whatever I offered to the world, they would accept, you know what I mean? And I was heavily East Coast influenced. I listened to a lot of East Coast rappers coming up because that's when it started. That's all it was Run DMC and Fat Boys and Big Daddy Kane and Rakim. So they were all from one place. So I definitely had an East Coast sound as far as beats and, you know, aggression.
Right.
Because I thought I got to do what they doing, but I'd still put my own spin on it. And Richmond helped me to develop that and not be ashamed of where I was from, even though nobody else had come from where I was from. Nobody had made it.
Right. Well, one thing I always talk about on the show, two questions I typically ask are, what do your parents do?
Mm-hmm.
And then where are you from? Well, I clearly know where you're from.
Right.
But the reason why those questions are so important, because typically people who do great things, we have to see, like, you know, Michael Jackson as from someone who's like in isolation,
right? Right?
He's like, oh, Michael made it. And he's just,
right,
a unicorn. But he was in an incubator,
right,
situation where, you know, he's probably, I don't know what, where he ranked, probably the seventh child or sixth,
right,
child. So he had other brothers who performed. He also, right, had a father who was in a band,
right,
beforehand. So, ooh, he was able to be a, to groom his skills,
right,
to
at become, a very young age.
Yes. How did you groom your skills? Like, how did that happen for you?
Just from listening and paying attention. Like I said, the first time that I heard hip hop, you know, it might have been a Run DMC or the Fat Boys or something like that. I would say 84, 85. And it definitely felt like it was speaking to me directly. I never knew what Run DMC looked like at first. I just heard them. I think it might have been Hard Times or something like that. Maybe Sucker MCs. But every record was, you know, it was the guy that had the lighter voice, and he was kind of upbeat, and it was the guy that had the kind of laid back voice, but he was still aggressive. So that was DMC, and Run was the other voice. So when I saw them, I think the first time I saw them might have been on this TV show called like Graffiti Rock or something, or maybe they were on Soul Train or something. And I remember seeing him, and I was like, yo, like, Run looks like me. Like, I look like I could be that. He's skinny, sideburns, you know what I mean? Nappy hair, but not nappy, but still, you know what I mean? And I was like, man, like, skinny, lanky. And I had all those qualities, and all he was doing was putting words over beats, and they were just happening to rhyme. So, you know, I started paying attention to hip-hop after that, and I followed them religiously. I actually met them when I was like 13 years old in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I actually have a picture with them when I was like 13. From that point on, I was done. I was totally immersed in the whole culture. Everything involved in hip hop, I did. Graffiti, which I sucked at. DJing, which I sucked at early on in my life, but I'm definitely way better now than I was then. But the first break dancing I did, I got a cool response from it. But rapping was the first thing I did that I actually got a response where it was like, oh. And I was like, this must be it then.
And what age was this?
Oh man, I might have been like 13. You know what I mean? And I wrote a song called Maybe, Maybe Not, because I didn't have no instruments, and it was about talking to these girls. It was about talking to some girls, and
do you remember it?
I remember the hook, because you could beatbox the hook and say the words at the same time, kind of like Dougie Fresh or Buffy from the Fat Boys used to do. So I can't remember the raps, but I would get to, so I would say the rap a cappella, and then when I would get to the hook, it was so basic. I would get to the hook, and the hook was maybe or maybe not, maybe or maybe not. Because you could still say that and still do the beat. So it was super simple, but that was the hook of the song. And it was about, at every turn, at the end of every verse, I would get to whether this girl would go out with me or not. And her thing was maybe, maybe not. And then the third verse, I kind of got fresh. And I was the nerd at first. I got fresh. I got cool. And then she asked me. And the spin of events was I hit her back with the same hook, the maybe, maybe not hook. So that was my first foray into writing an actual song and having it have structure and, you know, and points and things like that. So yeah, for sure, that was around the first time.
One thing, you know, we both come from Richmond,
right?
How did you manage to break into the music industry being from where you're from?
Well, being from Richmond, it was hard, and I want to say once D'Angelo came out. And I remember being in talent shows with D'Angelo. His name was he had a band called Michael Archer and Precise. His name was Michael Archer. So he had a band, and he was singing guy covers. I like Groove Me.
You know Trent, Brian Trent?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah. So D'Angelo made it. You know what I mean? So, you know, we look up and I saw Brown Sugar. And before that, let me backtrack a little bit. It was another group that came out of here that had signed to Eric. I don't think they were from Richmond, but they definitely had ties in Richmond, and they were called Shades of Lingo, and they were signed to like Eric Sermon.
Okay.
And I think they had they definitely had a video out, and they had a cool song. And then it was some other kids from here that were called Down South.
Okay.
We had the Boogie Monsters too. They were from Virginia State. But I think they got signed to the same label that Digable Planets was on, and I think it their project didn't come out for a while. I think it might have been like 2 years. I didn't understand that process, but I did understand it after I got a record deal. But so Down South comes out, and they're on Big Beat Atlantic, and they had a song called Southern Comfort. And I remember the video, and they were like, you know, everybody was like, yo, you seen these guys from Richmond? They got on, they rapping, like one of them make beats, da, da, da. So it's three dudes. It was two light-skinned dudes and one dark-skinned dude. And I know who they are now. I'm just saying this is just what I knew then. And I remember I was watching Rap City one day, and they was like, oh, you know, we got a brand new group, you know, da-da-da-da-da, Down South. And I saw their video, and I was with some of my homeboys. We were in, I think it was over off of Brooklyn Park Boulevard. It was definitely in Northside. We saw their video, and the video was all, like, cornfields and like grass and dirt roads.
On something like Bubba Sparks type.
But it wasn't even that cool as Bubba Sparks. Okay. It was definitely like, it didn't show no city elements of it at all. Now, don't get me wrong. Their song made sense with that. They were talking about, when I go back home, this is what home is like to me. This was their, what it was like for them. So they, you know, they talking about their grandmothers. And, you know, when I go back to grandma's house, you know, this is what I get. And this is what she cooks. And it's that good old Southern comfort. But we hated the video because we was like, Richmond don't look like that.
Right.
Dang, they can't be from Richmond. Like, why? And you know how sometimes you get a record deal and you do whatever they tell you to do and you shoot whatever they tell you to shoot. I don't know their story. But I know by the time it got to my eyes, I saw it and I was like, that's not Richmond. That's not. Yeah, it's parts that can look like that. But damn, that's what they chose to go with. So I was mad. I was livid. So the aggression of Mad Skills and the frustration of Mad Skills when I first came out from screaming Virginia, 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 and this is what we got. We got cats down here to spit bars. We got producers. We got, you know what I'm saying, MCs. Like, we wear Tims. We wear hoodies. Like, yo, we be on the corner and say, we got corners. Like, all of that came from looking at that Down South video. And I know one of the guys, Sean J. Period, an amazing producer. I just got back in contact with him within the last couple of years. And he ended up doing 3 or 4 tracks on my first album.
Mm.
Amazing producer. So I don't even think he knows this story, but that initial frustration came from me seeing their video. And I felt like they weren't representing Richmond in the same way that I wanted to. I wanted people to see a bigger part of Richmond and Virginia as a whole. And I couldn't put it on D'Angelo's shoulders. I think D'Angelo came on. He's an R&B singer.
Right.
Like, fuck y'all want him to do? Like, when I was like, oh, man, he'll never say shit about Richmond. You know? And I'm like, what the fuck you want him to do? He's an R&B singer. What, he's supposed to make a song called Cruising in Richmond? Like, what the fuck? Yeah, he's an R&B singer, bro. R. Kelly don't have a song called
Chicago.
Right. He don't have a song called Bump and Grind in Chicago. Fuck y'all mean. It's up to us. We the rappers. We say that shit. We shout our cities out and our hoods and, you know, our cliques and our squads. Like, so when they didn't do that, I felt compelled that I had to.
But how did you make that industry move? Like, what was that first shift?
It was I totally got off track of that question, but
no, it was I loved it. It was great.
No, what happened was I saw D'Angelo. I was going to these seminars. I would get off work. I worked at the VCU parking deck. I would get off of work and I would send in my demos to, you know, these labels.
Was it like looking at the back of the CD and then mailing it?
Well, I had a friend that worked in radio. Mike Street worked in radio, and he used to get, you know, free records all the time. He worked at a college radio station. We would go up there and we would, you know, we knew people would come down. They'd be like, oh, you know, I'm traveling with Wu-Tang Clan. I'm the A&R for Loud. We'd be like, oh, okay, cool. And my thing was, when I ran into cats, I would never tell them. I would never say to them, like, yo, can I get on? Can you look out for me? I would just say, yo, what's up, man? My name Mad Skills, and y'all gonna hear about me one day. Like, that was it. I ain't want no picture. I ain't want nothing. And, so I would send off the tapes. Nothing happened. I was going to these conventions, bumping elbows with all of these people. I was going to Jack the Rapper. I was going to How Could I Be Down. I was going to the Gavin. And I'm flying at this point. Some of my first flights had taken place at this point. And I sent a tape. I used to get the Source magazine. It was a battle for world supremacy. MC battle, and I sent a 1-minute acapella tape to the address. Somebody hit me back. It was a girl. I think her name was Kristen. I think she hit me back, and she said, "You made it." And it was Clark Kent's battle for world supremacy. He used to do a thing called Superman Inc. And they did a new music seminar every year. They did it, battle for world supremacy, and I entered it. I came in second, but everybody I had sent a tape to was in that room watching me.
Okay.
So this shit was, and I just uploaded it to like YouTube maybe like a year ago, but it's a battle between me and a guy named Supernatural. And
very famous
very famous battle. It went down to the wire. Nobody, they couldn't decide. The judges were Puffy, Tracy Waples, Sheena Lester, my man Todd won. Everybody was in the room. Africa Bambaataa was there. Dame Dash was there. Whoever the CEO of Loud Records, Steve Rifkin, was there.
This is in New York?
Yes. Tommy Boy. Everybody in that room I had sent a tape to. So they already knew about me. And then they're like, yo, I have his tape on my desk. That guy's a problem. So I lose. I'm pissed. In hindsight, I'm glad I lost. I'm pissed. Sidebar. I come outside as I'm pissed. I'm getting ready to leave. And it's a young Jay-Z outside in the front of the Sheraton Manhattan Hotel roasting niggas. Completely roasting niggas. Clark Kent is with him. Dame is with him. And I just put some footage of that on my IG. Somebody found it. He is completely roasting niggas. I'm watching known rappers with platinum albums. Lean in for a second, listen to him, and like, yeah, I don't want no problems with him. Like, I'm the fuck out. This is a young Jay-Z. So I lose, and Clark Kent hit me up and said, yo, I really want to fuck with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you dope. Like, if you come to New York, you know what I'm saying? I got a spot you could record. I'll send you some beats. So Clark Kent started sending me beats. I started recording some of his songs. And then all of these A&Rs, they go back to the office Monday and listen to the tape. They listen to the tape, and then they start contacting me. And that's how the record deal happened.
Because Clark was A&R at Atlantic at this time?
Yes. Yeah, I don't think he was at this time. He was busy trying to get Jay-Z a deal.
Okay.
And nobody was signed Jay-Z. They didn't get it. Clark was an amazing producer. He had a studio. And it's funny because some of the best Jay-Z songs I've ever heard in my life, I heard at Clark Kent's house. And I still haven't heard them to this day.
Wow. I interviewed him last week.
Right.
And we talked about that. And he was like, yo, like a lot of the records, we just lost the debt.
Yeah. They were all on debts.
Yeah.
I used to go to Clark Towson. You know me at this point, you know, I've already lost a major battle. So I'm really sharpening my sword. And I'm like, whoever won it can get it. I don't give a fuck who it is. And I was so cocky. I was so arrogant. And I used to tell Clark all the time, like, yo, whoever. Like, I don't care. He likes skills. I like you. You at my crib. I think you're dope. You're going to make it. Chill. You know what? Don't diss Jay's. Don't diss Hov. I was like, yo, man, I know that's your man, but fuck that nigga. Like, he was like, skills. He used to tell me this all the time. He said, Jay, he told me this in 93. He said, skills, Jay-Z is a Jesus Christ of rap. Chill. Jeez. I said, yo, man, your man is cool. He cool. But yo, trust me, bro, bar for bar, I will rock his where he was like skills. Like, understand, it's almost like you sitting next to Magic Johnson. Cause Magic Johnson said, come to the crib. I like your jump shot. I'm gonna show you some shit. Like, and you keep disrespecting Kareem. Like, don't do that.
Right.
And that's when it made sense to me.
Well, you know what though? I think that's also a big shift of what I had to learn coming from Richmond. I think this is for any person coming from a smaller market, a smaller town, and going into a place like New York or LA or Atlanta, right, or Nashville, that it's an industry,
mm-hmm,
right? A lot of times even how we're here today,
right,
is very not industry.
Right.
The way we would conduct each other, see each other in LA or New York, is totally different than how we would here in Virginia. Yes. Oh, you know my sister? Yo, you know my cousin? Right, yeah, let's make it happen.
Exactly.
It was a shift, I think, that a lot of people coming from small towns, making music with your friends, yes, or people you grew up with folks that you don't know that well,
mm-hmm,
you have to politic a little bit more,
right?
Like, and build relationships and cultivate network. Did you have that kind of tug of war issue?
Once I got in the door, man, it was just about being able to help the people that I wanted to help. You know, I was more so set on, you know, getting my crew on and making sure that what I wanted to accomplish, I did. And it was weird because when I look back at it, like, I got exactly what I asked for. I should have asked to sell 50 million records or sell Thriller. That's what I should have asked for. But I was like, I remember somebody asking, it was like the album came out. I said, yo, what do you want to accomplish with this album? And I was like, yo, I want people to know my name and I want them to know where I'm from. And when I look back at it from where, that's basically what I got. No critical sales, like nothing crazy came behind it, but it was a starting point for Virginia artists to be able to say, I'm from Virginia. And people would end up saying, oh, you from where Mad Skills from? So it was like, we used to have nobody. Right. And now we got somebody, because I was screaming it so much. But yeah, to get back to the question, it was just, I wanted people to know about where I was from. And that was very important to me in 1993-94.
You know what? We're going to take a quick break. And next we're going to get into your career.
Okay.
Behind the scenes.
Let's get it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. and so one thing that you touched on is helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I always say that I love rap, but rap is like there's two different parts of me, right? Mm-hmm. There's like the part of me where what rap fulfills is like, I can shit on you. Like,
right.
I'm the man.
Right.
Like, I got skill.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But there's another part of my career, as a songwriter here for the podcast, where it's about assisting other people.
Right.
And where it's zero ego at all.
Right.
It's just about telling other people's story or helping get to where they want to be.
Right.
How did that that mental shift happen for you professionally?
Well, I knew that, you know, some of these people that I was around were super talented and they deserved to be heard. And if I was the platform right now that could get their voices heard, and so be it. And I was going to do whatever it was. I was running with a crew of like 13 dudes. Like, nine of us were like rappers. The rest were like DJs, producers. So if I'm the only person that's got the outlet right now, then, you know, so be it. So that's how you end up getting the Super Friends. And Lonnie B was going around with me across the country as like a hype man. Me and him were going to radio stations, terrorizing freestyle sessions. Cause that was back in the day when you went up to DJ Whoop De Whoop Saturday Night Mix Show, like, we're going to interview you. We're going to play your song, but yo, I'm about to throw this beat on. Like, I need to hear something. What y'all got?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it was very important. And I kept people around me that on any given day could shit on me. And I liked that because it kept me steel sharp and steel. It kept me sharp. So I had a guy, one of my best friends at the time, Kalonji, probably one of my favorite MCs of all time. Like dude was ridiculous, like ridiculous. Like, but he had a way of, he rapped about things that we probably had no knowledge of. So he would also rap about it, but it would make the listener feel like, damn, this dude is so much more smarter than me. And he would never say a word or say a phrase and not explain it in the same bar. You know what I mean? So when he explained it, it was just like, damn, it's like, damn, I don't even know what that is, and I should. You know what I mean? You automatically felt like he was superior. And he rapped about a lot of cosmic stuff and, you know, things, but he also rapped about real life and real like emotion. But every time he got on the mic, it was an event. And then you had Lonnie B, who had that deep baritone voice and those punchlines, and he stung and he sounded so arrogant and cocky, and he was so sure of himself. And then you had Danger Mouth, who was a creative genius, you know what I'm saying? Beast. With just the ideas, and so it's like where he lacked that in aggressive punchlines and, you know, kind of like that Big L real, you know, stab punchlines, his ideas and what he could do with words was amazing. So I had these guys around me every day, and it was no way I could not be at my best. And if I was, if I went to a radio station and my homeboy outshined me that day, that's how it was supposed to happen.
At this time, you're pursuing career as frontal talent. Mm-hmm. But when did you, who pulled your coattail, or when did you, when the light bulb moment come off for you that, you know, I can make a living behind the scenes with my writing?
Oh, Missy Elliott.
How did that meeting happen, and how did that conversation happen?
Well, I met Missy through Tim and Magoo. So I want to say it was one day the No Way Out tour was in Richmond.
Okay.
Clark
was DJing.
Yeah. I got dropped from Big Beat Atlantic. Well, it was kind of mutual because I asked to be released because at this time, Junior Mafia was out. Biggie was out. Bad Boy was running. So Biggie having his own label, everybody was throwing money at Biggie. So Biggie decided to go with the same label I had, and all of the marketing dollars, all the attention, everything just shifted to Junior Mafia. So I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to be here. Like, I could probably be better off somewhere else, maybe go to Loud Records. You know, they're doing well with like Woo, Alcoholics, Mobb Deep. Go anywhere but here. But the shift is happening because it's now champagne and shiny suits and shit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how long this rap thing is gonna last. So I saw Magoo. Me and Magoo was talking, and Magoo was like, "What you doing now?" And I was like, "Yo, man, I'm back in Richmond. I'm chilling." You know, he was like, "Yo, you don't got no deal?" And I was like, "Nah." Like, I asked him to let me go or whatever. He's like, "Hold the fuck up. Like, yo, you got to meet Tim. I got to introduce you to Tim." So he was like, so Tim is there. Missy's there. He introduces me to Tim. Tim says, "Come to the studio tomorrow." I go to Master Sound, Virginia Beach. Me and Tim did like, first day I met him, we did like 6 songs. Same day. So Missy.
And had you heard of him?
Yeah, I knew Timbaland. The Aaliyah stuff was out.
Okay.
Timbaland and Magoo was out. I want to say Missy was about to come out, maybe, but she was a songwriter.
Okay.
I think I want to say the Gina Thompson remix was out. The Yeah. So that might have been out by then. And so Missy saw me working. But, you know, I'm looking at the situation. I'm like, yo, I'm a rapper. Like, yo, I thought this shit would be different. You know what I mean? And then I come back to the studio maybe like 3 weeks later. I'm coming back and forth with Missy and Tim. And one day, like, she pulled up in like a purple Lamborghini and shit. And I was like, yo, what the fuck? Like, damn, do they have anything else besides the Aaliyah shit? I know the Genuine shit was out. But, she was caking. And I'm like, you know, then I started watching her. I would just sit in the room and just watch her and pay attention to her and Tim and how they created. And that's when I started paying attention to songwriting and words, because I've always been good with words. I can't sing, but I know melody and I knew words. And to watch Missy, you know, that was a good person to learn from. You know, and I don't even think she knew I was learning. I think she was just working, and I would just watch them and just see how they wrote and see how she came up with stuff. And that's when I started paying attention to songwriting.
How did your reputation as a writer develop and continue to grow?
Yeah, man. After a while, I started getting the little tricks of the trade, and I started getting better production from people, and I started realizing that some of these songs that I write might not be for me. You know what I mean? I already had a name. You know, I was known in the hip hop community. I'd been on BET, Rap City, what have you. I was in the Source magazine, Vibe magazine. So if you were following any of these hip hop publications or shows, you knew me. And I didn't realize that writing songs could be profitable for, you know, people who didn't get, you know, their proper credit or what have you. I didn't know about splits. I didn't know about publishing. I just knew I was helping. And in this case, I'm just happy for the opportunity. So if Tim don't feel like writing this verse today, or his brother's not going to write it, or, you know, it's an open 16 right here, I'm going to just put something there. I don't know who's going to say it. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's not. But I'm going to list the ideas to finish the song. So I started paying attention to that, and like I said, man, then ghostwriting came into I guess public knowledge, because people were writing songs but not getting credit for them, but you might have been getting something else, money, gifts. It was almost like a payola thing with like radio.
Okay.
But and I didn't know, you know what I'm saying? I was happy to get paid for what I did. I still listen to songs that I wrote, or I wrote verses on and I didn't get nothing for it, but I looked at that as like training ground.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Now of course none of these songs are like 80 million sold. I didn't write the second verse on Thriller, you know what I'm saying? But just little raps here and there on things that, you know, sold some copies but weren't massive, huge hits.
Because why is it with other forms of music,
right?
With rock or pop, that the writer is, it's okay if Mick Jagger doesn't write the song,
right?
It's accepted. Why do you feel like in hip hop that is a thing? That
because in hip hop we always had the stigma that whoever we was listening to wrote what they said, and it's like if they didn't write it, then who did? Because if somebody else wrote this and this is this amazing, and he should be rapping too, or she should be rapping too.
It's not the case, right? Because there's some people who, you have a knack, obviously, for rapping. But for a lot of people, they may not have the voice.
Right.
But they may have the words.
Right.
And what's your take on it? Do you think that it's okay?
At the end of the day, I think if, and I talked about this on a prior interview on The Breakfast Club, I think if I found out that certain people didn't come up with certain things, it would probably, as a fan, it would probably floor me. Like if I found out that Rakim didn't write "I Know You Got Soul,"
yeah,
that shit would probably
hurt you.
Like, because I'm such a Rakim fan. If I found out that Big Daddy Kane didn't write "Ain't No Half Stepping,"
it's a great song, but just cheapen the value for it a little.
Yes, but I know these guys are amazing writers, so. I don't think it should matter, because it's just about, sometimes it's about the delivery, you know what I mean? I pattern it to R&B songs sometimes, like, you know, and I use this example all the time. When Mary J. Blige sings "Not Gonna Cry," I don't sit there and go, "I wonder who wrote this." Mm. Like, she delivered the fuck out of the song.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sometimes it's about delivery as opposed to who wrote it. And even now they made it hard to even find out who wrote the song. You know what I'm saying? You got to dig to find out who wrote a song nowadays.
Because would you prefer the term songwriter,
yeah,
over ghostwriter?
Yes. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what we were doing. We were writing a song. We weren't writing a ghost.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We was writing a song. And I think a lot of times when I'm in a room with people and, you know, we're working, it's like that's the common goal. We all want to have the best song possible and be involved in the best song possible. And sometimes you might not come up with that by yourself.
I think it's also, too, we're living in an era now where we're a little bit more, kids don't really care.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't.
They don't really care the way that they did back in the 90s, right, and early 2000s about who, right, wrote the record in hip hop. Do you think that that ghostwriters of that era should be celebrated in the Songwriters Hall of Fame and receive more light for the contributions they made to the culture?
Especially if their song is, you know, if it gets that far. You know what I mean? Like, but I guess sometimes hip hop songs don't make it as far as a, you know, a U2 record or a, you know, I'm trying to think of what song could be so big that I can't believe you didn't give that person credit for. Oh,
Rapper's Delight.
Yeah, Rapper's Delight should not ever be mentioned without the words "Grandmaster Caz" following it.
Right.
Because a big portion of that record was just taken out of a book that he had. You know what I mean? But you know what? You know what I equate that to? I equate that to the fact that even in hip hop, we always forget about the motherfuckers who did it first. Hmm. Like we tend to. It's like if you're the first person, they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." Like, yo, we're going on. Like, you'll probably remember the fourth or the fifth person who did it, but you probably won't remember the first, because they invented it. They don't get as much credit as they should. Like we, you know, shit, we get in the car every day. We don't fucking, when we hit the button, we don't see Henry T. Ford's name pop up.
Right.
You know
exactly
what I mean? Like
exactly.
When we get in the car, it's like we almost forgot about it. And I think in hip hop, we got to do better about that, man, because, you know.
What do you think also, too, it's a matter of just the hip hop kind of growing up?
Yeah.
Like hip hop is now a middle aged person, if it was
yes.
a person.
Yes, it was middle aged. And it's, you know, you can't. Just because you enjoyed it when you had it and it was special to you, and you still can't be upset that it grew into something else. And it's the youth, man. It's the youth and it's technology and it's their music. And whatever the kids are doing, the music is going to reflect that.
Yeah, because you know what? With technology now, like how has that shifted the way you've done business and your professional career as a rapper and writer?
Oh man, I don't solicit my I might solicit my services as far as like DJing or things like that to people, but I don't really go online and say, oh yeah, here's a song if somebody wants to buy it. I don't think the people that I'm looking to sell this or wanting to hear this music is following me. So I don't really see the point of that.
Okay.
I can't just play a pop record and be like, yeah, you know, any one of y'all want this. I don't think Demi Lovato would hear that 1 minute snippet that I would post up of that song. I would rather get it to her in another manner. So I don't solicit songs in that way, but I do keep people abreast of what I'm doing, and where I'm going to be, what material I have out, what projects I have out. But yeah, I haven't figured out a way to do that yet. You know what I mean? And I think with technology being as big as it is, it should be a way that the people who are actually looking for songs and want to buy songs and see songs do well in the marketplace should be able to connect with the people who actually make them.
Who is a mentor? You going a little bit back in the conversation, you mentioned that you didn't have a knowledge about splits and publishing. Who was a person that kind of took you under their wing and was a mentor to you and taught you the business of music?
Business wise, I would say my old A&R, his name is Rob Tulo. We call him Reef. He works at, I want to say he's at Apple Music now, but he was the A&R at Big Beat Atlantic back then. And, you know, even whatever went down with the label, I never really faulted him for it. We were always on the same side. Like, and he let me know a lot about royalties and mechanicals, and he was like, you know, and my lawyer, you know what I'm saying? My lawyer would break it down in layman terms, and this is what you get, this is how much they take. They got to get this back first. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
So it was real, like, black and white, cut and dry, like, simple.
And your life now, your new EP, let's talk about it.
Oh, I'm the DJ and the rapper. Yeah. I figured that title was very, very self-explanatory. Because a lot of people would see me like, wait, is it the same guy? Like, I see his name on a flyer. That's the guy to do the wrap-ups, right? Like, can he DJ? Like, so I'm like, I'm going to just explain this shit to you in 6 words. I'm the DJ and a rapper. Same guy doing a different thing.
I love that.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So, and it's all songs that I wrote or co-wrote. It's an EP. It's only 6 songs, 7. And what I like to do is I just like to present music to people. And these are some of the songs that I have written and I have recorded. And I was just playing in my sets. Like, I would sandwich them in between, like, some other songs or whatever. And people enjoyed them. So I figured, like, I'm going to put it out. And I want to be one of those DJs that when people come see me DJ, I play my own shit too, in addition to the other songs that, you know, that are known and they want to dance to. But I want to be able to play my songs as well.
So I end every interview with the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that I ask folks, no matter who I've interviewed in the past, I've interviewed Michael Jackson's engineer, Bruce Wedeen.
Oh, wow.
Prince's engineer, Susan Rogers, of Purple Rain.
Wow.
And I went into Bruce Wedeen's house and there's nothing but Grammys plaques all over. Imagine this entire room.
Right.
And then some covered right. in Grammys. And I couldn't help but wonder what he sacrificed to get all those Grammys.
Mm.
If you're going to be great at something, you're going to be bad at something else.
Yes.
There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yes.
And so it's just a matter of, you know, what you find important.
Right.
And what about for you?
For me, I would say family and past relationships. I wasn't able to connect with people on a level that didn't understand what I wanted to do. And but not that's definitely not family. I've been there as much as I can for family, but sometimes in order to make sure that my family live the way that I had always envisioned them living, I wasn't around to always enjoy it. And I'm glad that, you know, people in my, they're not like convicts or criminals or, you know, and the shit didn't go totally left and was like, you were never there. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I definitely don't have those issues, but I could have, and I thank God for that. But it's, you know, I have, when I set my sights to something, I just have blinders on, you know what I'm saying? And it's not because I don't have the emotion or the spirit to love or to be. I have to get this done. And a lot of people don't understand that. And I haven't had a job in like fucking what, 20 years? So somebody who goes to work every day, not saying nothing is wrong with that.
But it offers them a certain amount of security.
Yeah, I don't have that. You know what I mean? And that's something that I sacrificed to roll those dice or to shoot that shot, to say that if one of these shots fall, then everybody's straight. Hmm. You know what I mean? I'm going to take that risk as opposed to going in here and just, and not saying I'm too proud or anything. If I had to get a job, I would get a job tomorrow. Like, I was just having a whole discussion about that. I've never been so prideful. And I'm like, oh, you know, I can't be seen working. Like, what do you mean? Motherfuckers can't see me working at the Walmart. Like, you could definitely see me working at Walmart. If that's what I had to do to take care of mine, then I would do it with a smile on my face every day. But I just so happened that I started this musical journey when I was 13, 14 years old, and it just happened to pay off.
Yeah, because I think just kids sometimes, they see LeBron James, mm-hmm. and they don't understand what LeBron James has sacrificed to be LeBron James.
Yes.
You see the money.
Right.
You see the fame and the admiration.
Right.
But like, what about, you can't get a burger at a restaurant
right.
without being like spoken to.
Right. And it's about to pass down to his kids.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I know, and I remember seeing something just not long ago where he said he felt he wished that he hadn't given Bronny his name.
Yeah.
Because that's an amazing fucking thing to have to live up to. Like, Bronny can't just go to the movies with friends and just kick it now.
Yeah, your
and
name's not even Mike. It's right, LeBron.
Right. It's right. It's, you don't have, your name's not Daniel.
Yeah.
You don't even have, like, it's two of y'all motherfuckers. It's you and your dad. And your dad happens to be the best player of this generation. Like, yo. And I understand it. Because as a parent, you're like, I don't want that for you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I did all of this so you and your mom and your brother and your sister be straight. And we're going to be straight regardless. And yes, I would love for you to pick up a basketball and try to be like me. But I don't want you to have to go through all that shit.
Right.
And he going to have to go through it. And hopefully he got somebody there. He has a person there that can tell him verbatim, I'm not going to let you do the same mistakes. I'm not, like, same with Shaquille and his son. Like, it's awesome to see them, but the fact that he was like, yo, I wish I hadn't given Bronny my name.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, yeah. Because he could have just been Kevin James and just been fine. But now, whew, he a junior, bro.
Well, Kevin James is famous too.
Yeah, but for something totally different. You know what I mean? You can be like, oh, and he's black. So it's not like that Kevin James is going to be your dad.
Well, Skills, thank you so much, man, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for what you represent to. I'm a proud Richmonder, for what you represent to my city.
Thank you, man.
How you represented us, being the foundation.
Right.
Like, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to the 50th episode of the Silent Giants podcast and to our very special guest, Mad Skills, for stopping by the show. Special thank you to the Silent Giants behind this episode of the Silent Giants podcast. This episode has been mixed by Mark Bird, Be sure to follow Mark on Instagram, and you can get to that by the link in the description. So, also be sure to check out my newest show, OPP, a show that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I have the link to that in the description as well. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge, signing off. Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.